What's going on, world? This is, well, world, we're screwed. Episode number 2. So, on today's episode of Well, World, We're Screwed, wanted to talk about quite a few things, honestly. There's so much stuff going on right now that it's kind of amazing the conversations that we could have and the things that we can talk about. But it's pretty amazing to me when you look at the state of the United States as a whole right now, okay? Now, if I walked out, I live in a community that is probably, based on my vision only, it's probably about 60% minorities and 40%, Caucasian, whatever you want to call us. And I'm perfectly fine with that. I have no issue with people of other races, any issues with other cultures, things like that. I have no problem whatsoever. I do have my reservations when it comes to Islam and Muslims and things like that, but that is not unwarranted given the fact that their Bible literally tells them to kill the infidels and to behead us and kill anyone that opposes them in the Quran. So that's I think that's a valid point. But at the end of the day, I try to have an open mind with everybody in terms of people, because I do believe that there's a possibility each and every day that people can be converted. And even if they don't make the ultimate decision to be converted and saying and openly admitting to family, friends, etc., that they're no longer Muslim or that they no longer believe those beliefs or whatever the case may be, I feel like people's hearts can change before they actually promote to the world what the difference is or what they've decided to change within themselves. And that's, I don't think it's uncommon. I think it happens a lot of times. I think even with Christianity, I think people will accept Jesus Christ as their savior long before they actually tell anybody about it in some circumstances, because it's a private, it's a private decision. It's something that they do on their own. They make that decision in private in in possibly their own home, maybe at church during an altar call or something like that. You never know. But a lot of people are not willing to share personal experiences with people. So I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about myself. All right. So we're going to dive into depth on this podcast and really give you an idea of where I've come from, what I've been through and why I have the beliefs that I have. So I am a child of a U.S. born mother who is half Native American and half God knows what. Most of our family history has been traced back to Europe, European. Pardon my continuing to clear my throat there. I don't know what's going on with me today, but I got some phlegm built up. So apologize for that. Hopefully it doesn't continue too much throughout the podcast. But anyway, mom would be considered Native American and European, so to speak. European could be, British, Scottish. I think the predominant area that the family on her side was from was Scotland. So it's a Scottish, mostly Scottish descent. Then my father was actually an immigrant from the UK who came to the United States. He actually got his green card before he even married my mom. He came to the United States and became a legal immigrant. He went through the process, got a green card, did it all on his own without the help of my mother. He actually worked on oil rigs in the UK, and that's how my mother and father met. My mom actually went over because of the military with my grandfather and went to school. She went to high school in Scotland, and that's how they met. And then they kept in touch, of course, and eventually my father came over to the United States. They met up in Florida, and my father legally went through the citizenship you know, took the steps to gain citizenship, and then my mother and my father got married. So it wasn't like he married my mom to become a citizen. He was already a citizen when they got married. So they meet up in Florida, they get married, they have, I was born in 1980 in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I was born there because that was where my mother's family was. My mother's family predominantly was in two areas of the United States, Missouri and New Orleans, or Louisiana. So I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, Charity Hospital in 1980, and then my sister, they actually migrated over from Louisiana to Florida. My sister was born in Sarasota, Florida in 1983. So you look at this kind of scenario, what we got going on. We got a mom who is a US born. My father is an illegal immigrant from the UK. I have a sister who is 3.5 years younger than me. And born in Florida, I was born in Louisiana. In 1984, I guess my father came out to my mother, told my mother that he was actually gay. He had been harboring these feelings of being a homosexual for a long time, but didn't. He had a very hard-nosed, you know, father. My grandfather Andy was an asshole. He was one of those people that you're a man, you're a man's man, and if you're not, you're a bitch. That was his like thought process. You know, he's the type of guy that he came outside at one point when my father and my uncles were young, and they had actually rescued a baby squirrel that had fallen either out of a tree or something, and they were trying to feed it and, you know, take care of it. And he came out and grabbed the squirrel, swung it around and slammed it against the wall of the house and killed it in front of them, and was like, that was his, you know, his idea of teaching them how to be men and not to have soft hearts and be like women. Crazy. Yeah, I get it. So dude was a nutcase, and has since passed away. You know, he died from cancer a few years back. And so in 1984, my dad comes out to my mom, and my mom wanted to make it work. You know, she wanted her kids to have a father. She didn't want to, to break up and separate. And, you know, quite honestly, I guess I've learned over the years that my mom was a bit of a freak. You know, she was one of those people that she was willing at the time to invite another man into their bedroom and allow certain things to go on that most women probably wouldn't want to have anything to do with. And it was, you know, it's pretty crazy to think about things that I've been privy to now that I'm an adult that happened back in the day. So long story short, you know, 1985-ish, my mom had kind of gotten to the point where she felt that it wasn't working. She felt like their relationship was going sideways. She felt like she was second best, that my dad was putting more emphasis on the males that he was interacting with than my mother. She got frustrated. She decided to take us. I don't know the whole story of what physically transpired in that particular instance that caused her to make the decision to remove my sister and me from Florida. But I know that she had met another man. His name was Jim. Jim Brown, actually. Believe it or not, his real name was James Brown. And he had his family lived in Berlin, New Jersey. So they decided to go back up north, and he took my mom and my sister and me with him. So from 85 until probably 87, I think it was first grade, might have been second grade before my dad finally found us again. But my mom literally took us away without telling my dad where we were going. I think she was so distraught and so hurt over everything that she just decided that she felt like the best thing she could do is keep us away from each other. And my dad actually ended up hiring a private investigator before he found us, which makes me feel good, because when you look back on the situation, it lets you know that he obviously loved myself and my sister. And my dad was a wonderful human being. He had a great heart, was a great guy. You know, I loved him to death. And in about 87, he finds us. and comes up to New Jersey to come see us, and we spent some time together with him. And this was probably a few months after. Don't ask me how I knew this. I'm a 7-year-old kid, and my mom receives a phone call from my dad. You know, this is after he had already found us, and had actually called our school and got some information. And back in the day, it was a little bit easier for people to access, you know, schools, especially if they were able to somehow prove that they were a parent, you know, whatever else. So he got a hold of us, got a hold of my mom, and they opened up a dialogue. They started talking to each other, and ultimately they decided that he would come to New Jersey and come see us. But before that happened, a few months prior to that, my mom received a phone call from him, and I don't know how at 7 years old I knew, but I think it was just because it was so predominant on the news and on TV and whatever was going on. But my mom was not afraid and hadn't been shy about letting me know, not necessarily my sister. She was still very young, about 3.5 years old at the time. But with me, she had been very vocal about my dad's homosexuality. So even at 7 years old, I knew my dad was gay. Or I knew that he was associated with the word gay. I didn't know what gay meant quite yet. So she's on a phone call with my dad. I knew she was talking to my dad. And she broke out into tears, was hysterical, you know, freaking out. Lots of crazy stuff going on. And I looked at her and I said, I was like, wow, does my dad have AIDS? And she didn't really know what to say. She just handed me the phone. And I asked my dad point blank. I'm like, Dad, do you have, you know, AIDS? And he was like, I do. You know, and so in 1987, I found out my dad was HIV positive. And I hadn't seen him since 1984. So he came up, he visited us in New Jersey for a little bit. He was there for about 4 or 5 days. I got to spend some time with him. And, you know, obviously from that point forward, I don't know if it was just because I was worried that he wasn't going to be around for much longer or what the deal was, but that just lit a fire in me at that point that I wanted to go live with my dad. And it broke my mom's heart. But at the time, that's what I wanted. So fast forward to like a month after my dad went back home to Bradenton, Florida. He was actually living in Bradenton at the time. And we were coming up on the summer of 1988. And my stepdad, I call him my stepdad because at some point they were, I don't think they ever physically married, but they were together for so long that it just became, you know, like a normal thing for us. But Jim was a scumbag. Jim was an alcoholic. Jim beat my mom. He beat my sister. He didn't put his hands on me until I was a little bit older, but I watched him beat my mom. I watched him beat, you know, slap and put his hands on my sister. And, it was a pretty rough, you know, period of time. So, I went and actually saw my dad in the summer of 88, summer of 89, and then in 1990, I told my mom that I wanted to go live with my dad. And they made the decision to allow me to do so. My sister actually came with me and spent about a month there in the summertime, and she went back home. And I stayed. And throughout that period of time, I witnessed some horrendous stuff. And, you know, I walked in on a friend of my dad's, Tony, who was helping us out. He actually lived in our place, but he was helping us out financially because my dad was struggling to pay the bills because he would get sick and then he would get better and then he would get sick and then he would get better. And it was all part of, you know, the HIV virus, which breaks down your immune system. And it was just really, really difficult for him to keep working. And, you know, he had government money from the government that he was getting and stuff like that. But it was just, you know, it was tough. So I walked in a couple times on Tony shooting up. You know, he would actually take my dad. He would take my dad's morphine pills that he was prescribed because he had HIV, and he would melt them down in a spoon and then he would inject them. And there was a couple times that I walked into him in the bathroom with, you know, a needle hanging out of his arm, wasted out of his mind, and it was just incredible, you know, the kind of crap that I went through and what I saw when I was younger. And I actually, there was actually a point in time when I walked in on my dad having sex with another man, which was probably one of the most traumatizing things that any kid can go through. And I think my dad knew in his heart that he didn't have much time left. And there was an evening, we had a guy that lived downstairs. I don't remember his name, but he was this like stringy, cracked out looking, you know, just, I mean, just a nasty looking person. And the only thing that kind of saved me in that situation is he had this tiny kitten. And I remember laying on his couch in his apartment because my dad asked me to go down there and like hang out with the kitten because he needed to speak to this guy for a while. And I remember, I mean, it was like an hour and a half went by, and I, you know, I was enjoying hanging out with this little baby kitten, and it was like sucking on my earlobe, and, you know, just, it was a cute little kitten, and I had a blast, you know, hanging out with this thing. I mean, I'm, at the time, I'm, you know, 9 years old or 10 years old, and it was awesome to hang out with this kitten, but I eventually got bored. I eventually was like, ah, what's going on? So I went upstairs, and I just opened the front door, and they're laying in the middle of the living room floor, just going at it. And I like screamed and turned around, slammed the door and walked out and ran out. And I don't even remember what happened after that. I think that was kind of one of the points where I just started blocking stuff out. And it was pretty incredible that I went through that and didn't have more of an influence over my future and a lot of other things. I mean, I'm telling you guys about it now because I think it's relevant to the history of who I am as a person and what I've been through. So at that point, it wasn't but a month or two later, and December 10th, 1990, my dad passed away. He died actually because of pneumonia with complications due to the HIV virus. So his immune system was so weak that he got pneumonia and wasn't able to recuperate from it. He passed away. My mom came down and got me, and I remember a lot of positive things about this particular scenario. I remember the morning that my dad passed away, he had been doing horribly. I mean, the day before, he was like puking up bile, and just like it seemed like he wasn't going to get any better. And then that morning, he woke up, he got out of bed, he came out with me to the kitchen. We actually had breakfast together. Someone had brought banana bread, and we sat down and drank orange juice and ate banana bread and had a conversation. And I got to actually spend a beautiful morning with my dad. And it wasn't but a few hours later that he finally passed away. And, you know, I remember some spiritual things within there that kind of happened. I remember sitting on the couch, and when the hospice nurse was there and when it was like the final moments, and I remember feeling a peace come over me. And I got up and I walked over to the window and I saw like a light like fly across the clouds. And it could have been anything. It could have been a plane. It could have been who knows what. But in my head and in that time, it felt to me like it was his spirit like leaving his body, you know. And I still remember like leaning on that for a long time. I was bitter. I was angry. I was pissed off. I remember a couple, like literally the next day, my mom was there. She came down to get me. And she brought me back up north, and the next 6 months after that point in time, I was pretty much like just lost. Like, I don't remember anything. I blacked it out. It was just terrible. So after my dad passed away in 1990, I was in fifth grade, and I went through a ton of different stuff. I mean, my mom had a hankering for dudes that beat her ass, you know, and it was like every boyfriend she had after that was some type of abusive or did something to her. And I remember she dated this Indian guy, Suki, that I thought he was the shit because the guy owned gas stations and liquor stores and he had all kinds of money. And whenever he would come over, he would just give me and my sister money and like get us out of the house so he could bang my mom. And it wasn't until, I don't know what happened, but I think my mom just got tired of him and tried to break up with him, and he didn't want to break up with her. He didn't want to allow her to break up with him, so he actually put a gun to her head and threatened to kill her if she didn't stay with him. And I don't know the whole story, but it was just you know, this guy. And then she had another boyfriend. His name was Bill, and Bill Corns was actually his name, and she met this guy literally like a week before he went to prison for 3 years. So him and a buddy of his got drunk, jumped a guy, and stole his wallet, and they got convicted of assault and strong-arm robbery. And he spent three years in the New Jersey State Penitentiary in Trenton, New Jersey. And she kept in touch with him over the 3 years that he was there. And when he got released, she actually drove up to Trenton, which was about 3 hours north of our house in Jersey, and picked him up from the prison and brought him like right to our house. So at the time I was, I think I was like 15. And this guy was just another piece of work. I mean, kind of guy that just beat my mom's ass all the time. He would get drunk and come home. And I remember her telling me stories that, like, I remember waking up one night on the couch and she's screaming upstairs. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? I run upstairs and kick the bedroom door open because the door was locked. And we had these like chintzy ass like Home Depot doors that were like made out of fiberboard. And I kicked the door in and he just looked at me and he was standing on the couch pissing on my mom. I mean, standing on the bed pissing on my mother. And I, you know, I didn't even know what to do. I just was like, what the fuck are you doing, you idiot? You know, and bullshit ensued and whatever. And, you know, we physically fought multiple times. You know, I would come home and fist fight with the guy. And it was just, I mean, just ridiculous. Some of the shit that we went through and the stuff that we had. And I just, you know, it was a crazy dynamic between the two of us. And I don't even know. The thing that kind of broke, the straw that broke the camel's back for me is when I turned 18, my aunt was actually getting married in LaPlace, Louisiana, and we drove down, we rented a van and we drove to LaPlace, me, Bill, my mom and my sister, and we were all attending the wedding. And while we were in Louisiana, I didn't know this at the time, I didn't find out until I got back home, but they went to, we were staying in a hotel in Baton Rouge, and they actually left one night and went to what's called Catfish Town in Baton Rouge, which is almost like Bourbon Street in New Orleans. It's, you know, like a place where there's a bunch of bars, kind of like a hangout deal. And he got wasted. And when they got back to the hotel, my sister had actually gone into their room and fallen asleep in their bed. And he was furious. He was pissed that she was in their bed because he, you know, I'm sure he wanted to get his fuck on or whatever he wanted to do. And my sister, and he was wasted. And my sister was in their bed. So my mom got my sister up or whatever and got her out of the room and got her into our room where she was supposed to be. And when she went back into the room, he held her down on the bed and choked her to the point where she believed that she was about a second away from death. And then for some reason, he just let go and rolled over and fell asleep. So I didn't find this out till we got back to New Jersey. And when we got back to Jersey, you know, my mom, I guess they had a fight one night. My mom was just tired of it. And she's like, I have to tell you something that happened while we were in Louisiana. And she told me the story. I went next door and we had a next door neighbor in the row homes that we lived in. And his name was Tommy. And Bill would go there and hang out, watch football, drink beer, get drunk, be stupid, you know, whatever. And the way that the buildings were set up, they were like recessed. So you would have like the neighbor to the left of you, the building was, the front door was out further than yours. So there was like a hallway almost that led out to their front door, and their front door was to the left. And then the neighbor that was next door to you was even with your front door, but then the neighbor that was to the right of them was pushed back out. So it was like, you know, each building, one was pushed out and one was recessed. It was kind of like, you know, they were like a, like just an in and out kind of setup on the way the buildings were built. So I walked out to the edge and they had the door open, just the screen door closed, as people do a lot in when the weather's nice up north. And I called him and I was like, hey, Bill. And he's like, what? And I was like, come to the door, you motherfucker. And he was like, who do you think you're talking to, bitch boy? And I was like, you piece of shit. And he gets up off the couch and comes to the front door and he stands behind the screen and he's like, what the fuck do you want? And I was like, you're going to try and kill my fucking mother and you don't think I'm going to find out about it, you piece of shit? And he was like, oh, fuck you. Me and your mom worked that out. I apologize. I told her I didn't mean it. And what the fuck do you think you're going to do, you bitch? And he leaned his face against the screen. probably the worst thing he possibly could have done, because I hauled off and stalked the shit out of him. I broke his nose. He fell against the steps inside the house and literally just started screaming because I literally had shattered his nose. And there was blood everywhere. And he called the cops. And the cops came. I explained the situation to him. And my mom, you know, kind of like went to bat for me. And the cops didn't arrest me. I didn't get in trouble. They didn't even take me away. Nothing. He got taken to the hospital. And he never came back to our house after that. So he came back. Well, I shouldn't say that. He never moved back into our house. He came back a couple times. He pleaded with my mom, tried to get, you know, her to let him come back and live with us. And she kept saying no. And thank God she stayed strong finally after all that time. And he actually had an uncle that lived in Virginia. And she got to the point where she just said, you know what, like, you need to go live with your uncle. Like, I can't deal with you anymore. Like, this is bullshit. Like, you know, it is what it is. And so we sent him, she sent him to Virginia. And he went to go live with his uncle in Virginia. Dude wasn't in Virginia 3 months. And he got a job in landscaping, which is what he did in Jersey. And he made a friend. You know, he had a buddy that he would go after the workday ended. And he would go drink beer with this guy and get wasted before he would go back to his apartment. And they ended up going to a bar, getting wasted. They ended up getting into some type of an argument. And he ended up breaking a beer bottle on the bar and slitting the dude's throat with it. So he ended up getting arrested and convicted of murder. And he actually ended up getting put to death by lethal injection in Virginia, which was insane. I mean, to think that you're like associated with somebody like that, that had the capacity or the thought process to be able to kill you, like, you know, makes me think back to the situation and how many times him and I fought and all the shit we went through. And just to be like, you know, what's to say that he couldn't have, like, you know, come downstairs when I was sleeping on the couch and, like, tried to kill me in the middle of the night or something. Who the hell knows? But so, you know, long story short, that was kind of the scenario. I was still in high school at the time. I actually went to go live with a friend of mine for a little while because I didn't want to be with my mom anymore because of all the bullshit and stuff that had gone on. I was just frustrated. And, you know, and life moved on. I mean, you know, when I was 21 years old, you know, my girlfriend at the time gave birth to my first daughter very, very young. You know, she was 17, I was 21, and I think both of us were just looking for a way to get out and to be on our own. And my daughter's now 18 and just graduated high school and is getting ready to go on to college at FIU, and I'm super proud of her. And me and her mom didn't marry. We actually moved down south with each other and broke up in 2005, and I've been with my now wife ever since, going on 14 years, and we have two beautiful daughters together as well. So I have three daughters altogether. And, you know, but I look back at these situations and things that I went through, and I hear people all the time talk about how circumstances and issues and things like this, like what I've gone through, have, like, ruined their lives. I had a girlfriend in 2005, actually, you know, right after I broke up with my daughter's mom, or right after me and my daughter's mom broke up. I dated a girl for almost a year before I met my wife. We actually broke up in 04. And I dated a girl for almost a year before I met my wife. Her name was Danielle. And she actually ended up getting pregnant while we were together. And she had an abortion without telling me. And that's probably one of the reasons why I am so frustrated, you know, when it comes to abortion and all that stuff, you know, is as being a father. And, you know, and don't get me wrong, you know, I was 24 years old. 25 years old, wasn't in the greatest financial situation. I already had one child with a woman that I was no longer with anymore. Didn't probably see a future with the girl that I was with, but I always wanted a boy. And the thought to me in my head is something that I'll never be able to live down, is I wonder if that was, like, my boy. You know, I wonder if that was my opportunity to have the boy that I always wanted. And because she chose to have an abortion without even talking to me about it. And I get it. You know, a lot of women will beat me up over this and say, well, it was her choice. Well, I don't agree with that, because I'm the dad. I'm part of the conception. I think a conversation should have at least been had. And worst case scenario, if she didn't want the baby, I would have taken it. I would have had no problem, because I'll tell you what, I went through some shit with my oldest daughter's mom through the 11-year period of time that we were not together and my daughter was in her home. And I dealt with it. I never ran away. I paid my child support. I picked my daughter up every weekend that I was allowed to. I took care of her. I did everything that she possibly needed to do and was the best father I could possibly be. So much so that to the point where when she was 14 years old and a freshman in high school, she finally came to live with me permanently. And she's been here and still lives in my house right now. She will be going away to college, like I said, in FIU in August. But as of right now, she lives under my roof. And she has for the last 4 years. So it's when you're a good dad and you do the right thing, it always comes around to benefit you in the long run, in my personal opinion. So, and I've never asked her mom for a penny since she's been living under my roof. She's been here since she was 14 years old, and I've never once asked her mother for child support. I've never asked her mom for anything. The only money that her mom has given us or paid towards anything for her since she's been living in my house, well, she paid a portion of her Sweet 16 party because we had a nice, you know, large Sweet 16 party for her. And even in that, she paid about a third of what we actually paid. So, you know, it is what it is. But long story short, you know, the whole point of what I'm getting at is that I've been through some shit, you know. And in that instance, I feel like it should have been a conversation. It should have been, hey, I'm pregnant. I really don't want to keep this baby. What do you want me to do? And my response to that, even at that time, would have been, please keep the baby. If you don't want to have anything to do with the baby when the baby's born, I'll be more than happy to take care of it. I'll pay for your pregnancy. I'll pay for your doctor bills. I'll pay for everything you need up to the point of birth. And then at that point, I'll move on and take care of the baby. And you know what? You're right. Like some people have said to me in the past, well, what if she decided at that point that she wanted to be part of the baby's life? Okay, well, then I would have had to have been the one to deal with the circumstances. And I would now have two baby mamas and a wife. Or it may have changed the trajectory of my life completely from that point forward. I don't know. But when I look back, you know, throughout this, the only semblance of church that I had as a kid, my mom was the type of person that would go to church when she needed something. So around Christmas time, when they had gifts they were giving away or like the toy runs and things like that, that's when my mom went to church. My mom didn't ever go to a church and stay part of a church because she believed in anything. In my opinion, I felt like the only reason she did what she did was because she needed something. She got my sister and I involved in Awana at an early age, and I feel like she did that so she could get rid of us. I feel like she literally had 2 hours every Wednesday to take me and my sister to Awana and drop us off and go do whatever the hell she wanted. She probably would go see her boyfriends during the time that we were at Awana's and then come back and pick us up. I remember nights when Awana was like from 5 to 7. And I remember nights when it was like 8:30 and we were still stuck at church because my mom hadn't made it back to pick us up yet. You know, all kinds of crazy stuff that happened to me when I was growing up. But I don't look back on any of that and say, that's what shaped me into the horrendous person I am today. I'm not horrendous. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes every day. You know, one of the things that I, in the explanation of my podcast, I talk about being foul-mouthed. I'm not foul-mouthed because I feel like I have to be. It's just part of who I am. It's part of, you know, my life and what I've been through and what I've gone through. So if I drop the occasional F-bomb here and there, as a Christian and a Christ follower and a God-fearing man and a father and a husband, so be it. It is what it is. I really don't believe that God is looking down on me saying, oh, Luke, that's another checkbox, you know, another check off of the box because you just said the F word again. I don't believe that, you know, whatsoever. I don't believe that God judges us on such cynical things. Now, I could be wrong, and I may go before God in the pearly gates, and he may, you know, go down the list and say, well, this is every time you said the F word. This is every time you said the B word. This is every time you said the S word. This is every time you said this word. And I could be completely wrong, but I sincerely doubt, because the fact of the matter is that we're all sinners. Doesn't matter what the sin is, because God says that every sin holds the same weight. Murder holds the same weight as lying. Lying holds the same weight as saying, as using the Lord's name in vain. It is what it is. So doesn't mean that I believe that we should just continue to sin and do all this crazy stuff. But in the same respect, Jesus died on the cross for us because we're sinners. Point blank, period. So, but let's go back into, you know, the political agenda and talking about why I kind of feel the way that I feel is that after all this crap that I've been through and everything that I've gone through in my life,
it is infuriating to me to turn on the TV and hear the drama and the bullshit and all the stuff that we have going on right now in the United States. It's just unbelievable to me that people can literally sit back and watch President Trump and know that this man is a patriot, that he loves America with all his heart, that he believes in the American dream, that he believes in the American people, and that he wants nothing more than to make America great for everybody. All while making the economy better, bringing more jobs back to the United States, helping trade agreements with other countries that have taken advantage of us for a long time, have taken advantage of us for a long time, protecting the Second Amendment, protecting unborn babies and getting rid of infanticide, closing the borders down to make sure that we're properly vetting people that are coming into the United States and ensuring that the people we're allowing to come in and be parts of our country are actually going to be beneficial citizens and not just people that come in here and live off the government and kill people and, you know, use our money and our resources to send stuff home to their people. I have friends that literally have family in Cuba and they will literally use government money to buy clothing and food and all kinds of crazy stuff. Or what they do is they'll get their food stamps and they trade it with people for money and they go and they buy clothing and toiletries and electronics and all kinds of stuff and they send it back to their family in Cuba. They're literally taking advantage of the resources that they're being given here that come from my tax dollars. And it's infuriating. I have friends that I know that do this, and it kills me. So as we embark on tomorrow, Monday, which is Memorial Day, it's a somber day for me because I have quite a few friends over the years that the craziest part is I actually know more people who have taken their own lives as a result of their military service and the PTSD and issues that they've had from that. Some have been as a result of injury and they've gotten addicted to pain pills and medication and things like that, which have ultimately led to suicide and things like that. But it kills me when I think about all the people that have given their lives and paid that ultimate sacrifice for us to have the freedoms that we have. And then to see people like Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Cory Booker, Maxine Waters, Ilhan Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, blah, 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 and the list can go on and on and on, just shit all over these people. I mean, why don't they literally just go to Arlington Cemetery and just shit on graves? Because that's what I ultimately feel like. I feel like their agendas and what they are trying or attempting to do in this country is literally just shitting on the graves of the men and women who have died for our freedoms every single day since the inception of the United States. And it drives me crazy. You know, you look back in the end and you say, okay, I heard something great the other day. I was watching a video in a college where Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA was actually asked a question about why he felt like the Constitution was the greatest document ever written. And the student who asked the question started to lay out issues about slavery and, you know, bigotry and white supremacy and all this other stuff. And Charlie made, the comment that he made was pivotal. He said that you can't fault the people who wrote the document, or I'm sorry, he's like, you can't fault the document for the beliefs of the people who wrote it. That the document itself was written for all people. There's nothing in the Constitution that segregates blacks from whites or, you know, Hispanic people from whites, minorities, you know, whatever. The Constitution is written for all Americans. If you're an American citizen, the Constitution was written for you. If you're an American, if you hold a green card and you're a legal immigrant in the United States, the Constitution was written for you. The Constitution was not written for illegals. And like I said, one of the things that he said is you cannot fault the beliefs of the people who wrote the document, or you can't fault the document for the beliefs of the people who wrote it. And it's so true. You know, I mean, you look back at President Obama. President Obama was the most racist president we've ever had in the United States. I don't care what anybody says, because I'm gonna go out on a limb and I'm gonna say something that's probably gonna piss a lot of people off right now. But black people are the most racist people I know, and I'm sorry, guys. I have black brothers and sisters that I love with all my heart that are close personal friends of mine that I consider to be family, that I talk to every day. And I'm not going to put that on them because I don't believe that that's where they stand. But as a whole, in terms of a group of people, I personally believe that black people are 10 times more racist than anybody else in this country. I have never walked up to a black person and called them the N-word. I have never walked up to a black person and attacked them for being black. But I've been attacked. I've been called a racist. I've been called a cracker. I've been called, you know, a cake eater. I've been called all kinds of crazy shit over the years for being white. Why is it? It's just like the whole issue with the left and the MAGA hats and all this other crap that's going on. When are we finally going to see somebody actually go and attack a real man wearing a Make America Great Again hat? You're not going to see it because the left and the people that are doing it are too big of pussies to actually walk up to someone like myself, who's almost 6 feet tall and 290 pounds, wearing a Make America Great Again hat and actually do something about it. They're going to attack the children. They're going to attack, you know, the young kids in college. They're going to attack the senior citizens. They're going to attack the little Chinese people or Korean people walking down the street that are doing it. They're not going to walk up to a grown man and actually rip a Make America Great Again hat off of my head and proceed to try to attack me about it. Because if they do, they're going to get the shit knocked out of them. And that's either that or they're going to bullet in their ass, one or the other. So, dependent upon how the situation escalates. I have never attacked somebody for supporting Obama. I've never smashed a window on a car because it had a Hillary sticker on it or an Obama sticker or a Biden sticker or whatever the hell else there was. I've never yelled at somebody that I've seen wearing a chain shirt. I've never even screamed at or yelled at or gotten angry with somebody who I know is a Democrat who supported Obama and Biden and whatever else down the line. You know, my sister-in-law is a proud Democrat, someone who claims to be a Christian and a Democrat, which kills me because I think that's the biggest hypocrisy in the world. You can't be a Christian and be a Democrat. I'm sorry, but you can't support infanticide and illegals and Muslims and all this other crazy shit and be a Christian. You just can't do it. I'm sorry. So it is blatant hypocrisy in that. And given that certain circumstance. So, but at the end of the day, doesn't matter. But I've never yelled at her. I've never had a disagreement with her. I've never got mad at her. I've never treated her like crap. But I'll tell you what. I have a Jeep. And I had a Trump sticker on the back of my Jeep. Went out one morning. My back window was smashed out completely. And at first I was like, maybe it was just random because there was some car windows getting broken around here. You know, whatever. And I'm like, no big deal. My deductible is $500. So I was like, should I report it to the insurance company and pay the $500 deductible and get them to replace the window? Or should I just pay the $1,200 for the window and not worry about the insurance? Because I'm sure the insurance is probably going to go up more than the $1,200. I just decided to replace the window. So I replaced the window and I put the sticker. I actually had a spare sticker because I was going to put one on my wife's van and she was a little too nervous to have it. So I took the sticker, put it back on my window. Within a week of me replacing the window and putting that sticker back on the window was busted out again. Not a coincidence. Somebody clearly wasn't happy with my support of Donald Trump. And the sad part is at this particular point in time, I can't afford another $1,200 window. So I didn't actually put the sticker back on the window the second time that I had it replaced. And it sucks because I should be able to support Donald Trump. I should be able to wear what I want, put what I want on my car, and proudly support the President of the United States. But because the left is so intolerant, we can't. Look at the Covington boys. I mean, it's crazy to think that this kid smirked at a friggin' Indian, and it was, you know, 50 days of coverage on the media about all this crazy shit that was going to happen because of that and how this kid, you know, was a racist and, you know, I mean, just insanity. And then all these video clips start coming out and we start learning the truth. And we start seeing that it was all a ploy, it was all a hoax, it was all a bunch of bullshit, as everything that has anything to do with the left seems to be. Just like the Russia collusion bullshit. But then you have an Obama supporter and a transgender kid shoot up a high school in Colorado, and not even 2 days, and it's completely silent on the media. They don't talk about it at all. Because they're not going to take you down that rabbit hole. But they'll destroy this kid's reputation and try to make this kid from Covington High School look like a bigot, a xenophobe, a racist, whatever the hell you want to call him. And it's just, I don't get it. I mean, it's pure insanity in terms of what's going on in the United States right now. And it just drives me absolutely insane. So, but it kills me. So, long story short, as we go into Memorial Day tomorrow, you know, I really just pray that you guys will take a moment and just pray for those that have lost family members, friends, you know, whatever the case may be, and just honor those that have given their lives for our freedoms and our country. So as we go into Memorial Day tomorrow, I just pray, like I said, that you would honor those that have given their lives, and that you would celebrate but enjoy the day, but do it for the right reasons. Well, world, we're screwed. Episode number 2. I'm out of here.